with a mane of dark brown hair. Wearing a trench coat and heavy boots, he looked less unkempt than in his photo, with just a little stubble darkening his thick-set jaw, though he had a scar across his right cheek, which I hadn't noticed in the photograph. His olive-green eyes swept over the room and landed on us. They paused on me for but a second before he gave Lee a brief nod and headed across the room to another door.
"Vigo!"
Lee spoke up before he could reach it. He took my hand and led me toward the warden.
"This is my new wife, Violet."
My attention was drawn momentarily to Vigo's hands as we neared. His knuckles were red and raw, like he'd punched someone or something one too many times, without adequate protection. Vigo's eyes returned to me, his right brow raising a fraction. He nodded, his expression remaining stoic. I nodded back just as curtly. Then his focus resumed on Lee.
"Good evening, Mr. Bertrand."
He turned and left the reception. The room went quiet, still in his absence, as though his presence had brought with it an aura of tension.
"Well," Lee whispered, blowing out softly, "that was quick."
"Yeah," I said dryly. "He didn't seem to approve of me." Lee chuckled. "There aren't many people he does approve of, apparently. He's a loner. Lives in a cabin by himself up in the mountains." Lee fell silent, his eyes narrowing like he was straining to listen to something. Then he said, "Do you hear that?" I strained to listen and nodded. I could just about make out voices murmuring somewhere in our vicinity. "My colleagues, a few rooms away. The workday is over, but they often hang around in the evenings. Anyway, let's take a look around."
We moved to an elevator, and Lee punched the button for the 7th floor. "There are 7 levels in total, as you can see," Lee said, trailing a finger over a map of the facility that hung against the elevator door. "The lab is huge, with hundreds of rooms. It's recently been renovated and expanded," he explained. "It was less than half the size only last year."
That would explain why everything looked so new and shiny. Arriving on the 7th floor, I realized why Matris ought to be afraid. I wasn't a scientist, but the apparatus contained within these labs looked sleek and sophisticated. The building itself seemed to be almost as large as the city lab in Matris. That was saying a lot, considering that Matris's lab was also used for routine euthanasia of criminals. In Patris, from what I knew, they didn't bother with all that hassle. If somebody committed a serious crime like murder, they were publicly hanged.
"Are you aware of everything they're developing here?"
I asked Lee in a whisper as we moved along the wide hallway and peered through the open doorways of the labs.
"Not everything," he said, "but a fair amount. A lot of time and resources are going toward developing the smart drug. Its official name is Benoxapane," he added. "The drug has already been formulated and deemed fit for consumption. Several scientists in this lab are going to take it within the week."
"Will you?" He shook his head.
"No."
"Do you know the real reason they're developing it? What exactly do they plan to do with it?"
"Matrix's news channels have basically got it right," Lee muttered beneath his breath. "Emotions are a hindrance of King Maxim's plans."
Before I could ask anything more, we turned a corner and arrived outside a closed white door, next to which was a screen. Lee swiped his thumb, and the door opened. We emerged in another lab, the largest I had seen so far, with row after row of tables lined with microscopes, Bunsen burners, and specimen racks filling the room from wall to wall. Around the edges were glass cabinets, some containing books, others piles of folded lab coats. But as we roamed the lab, one in particular caught my eye. Lee noticed where my attention had flown, and it appeared that this was where he was leading me.
"You've spotted it, haven't you?"
It was hard not to spot. One of the glass cabinets was unique from the others. It didn't have shelves, and the glass looked much thicker, even reinforced. Perched in a tall black metal tripod was a silver egg. The silver egg. I moved up to the cabinet and stared at it. I couldn't believe it was just here, visible to anyone entering this lab, just a few feet away from me. I turned to Lee in confusion. "So this is definitely it?" I asked. He nodded. "This is the egg." "Can't you open this case?" There was a number pad next to it. He grimaced. "No, I'm not high up enough to access the code." I dared reach out and touch the glass. "But it's just... glass! Couldn't it be broken easily?" Lee reached for my hand and pulled me back. He began leading me to the other side of the lab. He didn't answer until we'd exited and returned to the corridor.
"We ought not linger in that room," he whispered as we made our way to the elevators. "As for the glass, yes, it could be broken if enough force was applied. You're talking about explosives, though. That glass is tough as hell. It wouldn't be so simple as smash and run. And then..." We moved into the elevator and he hit the button for the ground floor. "Of course, you'd have to escape Petrus. Trust me, if it was simple, I would have done it already. Remember also that we cannot get caught, neither you nor I. If one of us was, they would quickly place the blame on Matris."
I was mired in confusion. We had to retrieve the egg from the glass cabinet, but at the same time, nobody could suspect that it was us. What about when we suddenly went missing? Even if Lee didn't come with me but stayed behind, what about me? I'd had these doubts before, and Lee still had not clarified them.
"You'd better start giving me details,"
I said irritably, no longer able to hide my frustration. I was fed up of being led blindly along.
"I will," he said, "tonight, when we get home."
The elevator reached the ground floor, and we stepped out. "For now," he said, his tone raising and brightening, "I ought to take you to briefly meet my colleagues." He glanced down at me, an artificial smile on his lips, clearly indicating that I assumed the same.
"We got married today, remember?"
"Right." He led me across the reception area toward a pair of double doors. Before pushing open the door, Lee whispered,
"The head scientist of this lab is in here. My boss, Richard. He's the overweight one."
He placed my arm through his and walked me inside. A group of 10 men were gathered around a billiards table, all of them older than Lee. I suspected in their mid-40s, except for one who looked about the same age, perhaps in his late 20s. My eyes lingered on the short, rotund man with blonde hair and a thick mustache. Richard.
"Lee!" the youngest man cheered. "This is your girl?" another man spoke up. "Violet, did you say her name was?"
"Yup, my wife," Lee said through his plastic smile. He displayed my ring finger to them.
"Good man," the younger guy said, patting Lee on the back.
"Thanks, Simon," Lee said.
Richard and the others weren't nearly as informal as Simon. They nodded politely and murmured, "Congratulations." Lee took a seat with me on a couch, accompanied by Simon and 3 others who abandoned the game. Richard also strolled over.
"How many more days of leave will you be taking?" Richard asked Lee, his voice rich and throaty.
"Oh, I'm not entirely sure, Richard," Lee replied. "As you can imagine, Violet and I have a lot to catch up on and a number of things to adjust around the house."
"I understand. Let me know once you have a date."
"Of course."
Lee fell into 5 minutes of small talk, throughout which nobody bothered to address me. If I wasn't a guilty spy on a hazardous mission for Matris, I would have been annoyed by that. As it was, I was relieved that the attention was kept off me, and Lee tackled all the questions. Lee stood up.
"Well, we're off to have dinner," he concluded. "I'll catch you around."
"Where are you going to eat?" Simon asked.
Lee said, slipping a hand into his pocket. He bobbed thoughtfully on his feet.
Before he could reply, Simon suggested,
"How about the Red Boar? We were planning to go there ourselves tonight. I'm pretty starved now, in fact. You could join us."
Lee hesitated, but apparently struggling to find a polite way to turn Simon down, replied,
"Okay, sounds like a plan."
Other than Simon, four others accompanied us: Luke, Frederick, James, and Rocco. The others remained in the billiards room, except for Richard, who headed home. Lee pulled back with me as the men exited.
"The restaurant's not too far from here," he said beneath his breath. "About 20 minutes by car. Though it's in an area I'd hoped to avoid. Not the end of the world, though, as long as you stick with me."
On exiting the lab, we headed to the parking lot where Simon offered to drive us in his vehicle. I sat in the back, while Lee sat in the passenger seat next to Simon. We drove out of the lab compound and passed road after road that was teeming with life. Men with their wives and children populated the sidewalks, milling in and out of shops and restaurants. These were the same streets that had been almost empty earlier in the day. I sensed us approaching the river that encircled the palace by the subtle change of atmosphere, the breeze seeping through the car windows becoming crisper. We reached a parking lot at the end of a long promenade, beyond which were the river's gushing currents and the tall, well-lit walls of the palace. On our side was a long line of bars and eateries. I immediately noted the lack of women and children in this area.
"There's the place," Lee pointed it out to me.
A bright red sign depicting a muscly boar hung above a large, dimly lit restaurant, outside of which was an open-air enclosure of tables. Our group managed to secure a table from a group who'd just finished eating as we arrived. I didn't have an appetite as we sat down and eyed the menus. I always felt tense around strangers, and particularly these men who were potential obstacles in accomplishing my mission. I told Lee to order me whatever he was having before leaning back in my seat, half in and half out of the conversation sparking up among the men around me. I'd hoped that, as uncomfortable as the meal might be, it would at least prove to be interesting, that they'd talk about their work and types of experiments they ran all day in that monstrous lab. But apparently work talk was reserved for work hours. Their primary topic of conversation became a major event that was due to take place soon, a cage fight between two of Patris's most skilled professional fighters. I found it endlessly strange to listen to them talk about fighting as a sport, something that people watched for entertainment, when in Matrix any sort of physical combat was discouraged to the point that even a punch could have somebody reprimanded. Violence was taboo in my world, as much as women getting jobs was in theirs.
"What are your hobbies?"
Simon turned to me and asked as the food arrived.
"Oh, someone's deigned to ask me a question. Hobbies? What hobbies would be deemed acceptable here in Patris for a woman?"
Cooking was the first that sprang to mind. Ironically, I actually couldn't cook to save my life. Lee was a better cook than I could ever hope to be. It felt like the only thing I knew how to do well was fight. I was glad when Lee helped me out.
"Other than being a bread artisan, Violet is a painter, an excellent painter."
I scoffed internally.
"Wonderful," Simon replied, sipping from his glass. "Next time I come to visit Lee, I'll have to take a look."
"Yeah, good luck getting yourself out of that one, Lee. He'd have to go hunting for some unsigned paintings to brighten up his walls. Though it shouldn't come to that. I was still holding out hope that this mission would only take a matter of days. Then I could see my brother again in as early as next week. Though I'd been given no reason to hope this. Nobody had mentioned a time frame yet, neither Alistair nor Lee.
"What are your hobbies?"
I returned the question to Simon, hoping to divert the attention away from myself. But as Simon began to answer, I hardly heard him. Something, someone, caught my eye across the tables.
It was my cousin, Cad.
Cad, whom I had not seen in years. He was with two other young men I guessed were friends. The three of them were moving toward our eatery, already scanning for a seat among the outside tables. He hadn't spotted me yet, but that wouldn't last long if I didn't get the hell out of here.
Being surrounded by Lee's colleagues, I didn't have the time or ability to explain anything to Lee, of course. I immediately turned my back on Cad while lowering my hand beneath the table to grip Lee's knee. I held it firmly, hoping to instill in him my urgency.
I'm sorry, Simon. You'll have to excuse me. Lee, where are the restrooms?
Lee looked confused, but nodded toward the entrance of the restaurant.
At the back, near the bar. I'll come with you.
It's all right, I murmured, biting down on my lower lip.
Stay here.
I feared the two of us standing at once would attract more attention our way. Cad might even think that we were a couple freeing up a table. There was a moment of hesitation in Lee, when I feared that he would insist on coming with me all the same. But it was just the back of the restaurant. That could hardly be considered leaving him.
Could it?
I tore away from him, trying to make my retreat as undramatic as possible, even as I was forced to walk sideways so that my face remained obscured from Cad, who was nearing closer and closer with his friends. The restaurant was huge. It had four main entrances, and I could hardly see through to the back of it as I stepped inside because of all the men moving around. I spotted the sign for the ladies' restrooms at the back, but to my dismay, they were closed for maintenance.
Closed? How could they close the restrooms?
The men's were open on the other side of the bar.
Damn it.
I was still the only woman in this place that I could see, so I suppose they'd hardly had any complaints. I backed into the shadows as best as I could while trying to keep a tab on Cad's movements, which was hard with all the bobbing heads. I caught a glimpse of him entering the building with his friends, obviously having failed at finding a table outside. They were making a beeline for the bar, which meant I needed to move again and fast. But I had effectively backed myself into a corner. There was only one path I could take from here to the main aisles that led to the doors, and that would mean crossing straight in front of Cad. If he saw me now, it could be a disaster. He would cause a scene and demand not only that I explain myself, but also that I go see his parents. I wouldn't be able to shake him off, and he wouldn't believe the lies that I'd fallen into a romance with Lee. Cad would know that it was impossible. And if any of those scientists heard him talking or discovered we were related, it would be far too much of a footprint for me to leave in Patras. My palms were sweating as I kept my gaze trained on the out-of-service sign of the restroom door, and their conversation floated in my ears above the rest of the noise in the pub. They were talking about rowing. Cad was, apparently, as keen a boater as ever. It was strange to hear my cousin's voice again. Strange, yet comforting. I felt a bittersweet twinge in my chest, wishing I could greet him. But I couldn't stand where I was much longer without looking seriously odd. I sensed that a waiter would be the first to ask me if I was all right. I twisted ever so slightly, just enough to glimpse the nearest exit. If I moved tactfully, I could slip around the back of Cad and his friend's chairs while they weren't looking. Then I could get lost in the crowd and make my way back outside. I could rejoin the dinner and tell Lee that I was feeling sick and that we needed to leave. But before I could even begin my attempt to move around them, Lee spoke up behind me.
Violet?
He'd come to see if I was all right. And he either had not been informed about my cousin or simply hadn't seen or recognized him. I was already picturing Cad turning to Lee and then following Lee's gaze toward me. I didn't have time to think. My gut instinct took over, and I found myself darting forward, past the out-of-order sign and into the ladies' bathroom. My heart raced as I gazed around the stalls. I spotted a window above the line of sinks, and, kicking off my shoes and hanging them over one wrist by their straps, I climbed onto the sink and pushed it open. Gripping its frame, I hauled myself up to find myself above a trash yard around the back of the building. Swinging my legs over, I leaped and landed on the roof of a trash can. I slid off, tearing the hem of my dress in the process, and landed on the puddle-strewn ground. I quickly slipped my shoes back on before hurrying toward the gates that marked the exit of the yard. Thankfully, they weren't locked. I rushed through them while trying to tidy my hair and straighten my dress. Taking a deep breath, I leaned back against the yard's wall.
Lee would probably go barging into the ladies' room after me and suspect that I had climbed through the window. I guessed he would climb through, too.
I would wait here for him to emerge, and then the two of us could roam back to the tables before taking our leave.
I couldn't help but wonder what was going through his head right now, though.
He might be doubting me, thinking that I'd decided I wanted to get out of all this, and tried to escape while I thought I could. If I hadn't had a reunion with my brother dangling ahead of me as a carrot, the notion of running away would probably be tempting. But even that would require a level of insanity I didn't possess. I'd be caught and probably thrust into jail. And jails in Patras were rumored to be a woman's worst nightmare. I would be better off in a Matrian detention center any day. As for Cad, I'd gotten out of the building before he had been able to see me properly. The most he would have seen of me was my back. Although Violet was not a very common name, I had to hope that he'd write it off as a coincidence and not think any more of it. I clasped my hands together, waiting tensely. The street was dark, except for a single strip of light a few hundred yards away. It cast eerie dancing shadows on the brickwork surrounding me. Where was Lee? Why was I still waiting for him? It occurred to me that maybe, rather than climb through the window, he might have gone around the front and would be making his way to the back alley now. I started moving toward the crowded street that ran perpendicular to the alley. I'd feel easier waiting where there were bright lights and people. But as I had almost reached the busy sidewalk, a group of men turned the corner. Big, heavy-set men with identical tattoos, a solid black square beneath the left ear. They had the rough appearance of farmers or manual laborers, suntanned skin, windswept hair, baggy clothes, and clunky boots. Almost colliding with me, they stopped abruptly, their eyes raking over me curiously. Balling my hands into fists, I kept my eyes firmly on the ground while attempting to dodge and slip past them. But one of them, a man with a pockmarked face and a jungle for eyebrows, apparently wasn't done looking at me. He moved directly in front of me, blocking my path.
"What are you doing alone?" he asked.
"What business is that of yours?" I said through gritted teeth. He clearly wasn't a warden.
I moved to push past him, but again he obstructed my way, taking a step closer to me this time.
"She's too well dressed to be a stray," one of his companions muttered.
I glared into the eyes of the man looming over me, refusing to be intimidated. I could have flashed my ring to show him that I had a guardian, but I wasn't a Patrian girl, and I wanted him to know it. He couldn't just push me around. I could tell that my stand aggravated him. His arm shot out to grab my wrist, but I had already predicted his movement, and with a sharp chop of my right hand, I knocked his arm aside and jerked backward. His eyes lowered to where I had struck him, which would soon show bruising, and then raised to me again in disbelief. I hadn't been sure why Lee had been hesitant to come to this part of town, but perhaps men like these were the reason. The man surfaced from his surprise and lurched forward, giving me no choice but to remove my stupid heels again and hurry back. I was feeling angry and frustrated enough to get into a physical fight with him, but I wasn't quite that stupid. Even if I outsmarted him, which, judging by the slowness of his reflexes, wouldn't be all that difficult, now, more than ever, I had to control my temper. Plus, he wasn't alone. As I ran, the voices of schoolchildren chimed in my ears.
"Violent Violet! Violent Violet!"
My nickname at school. I'd become notorious early on in my life for finding trouble. But if I didn't stop now, I would only be digging a deeper grave for myself. The man, and now his companions, pounded down the street after me. I wasn't sure what he intended to do if he caught up with me. Beat me for my insolence? They were apparently on the lookout for strays, a term I hadn't heard before, but I could take a good guess as to what it meant. Women who, for whatever reason,
found themselves living in Patras with no male to act as a guardian. No guardian in this country equated to less than zero rights. Unsupervised women became like lost children, wandering the streets at risk. According to my knowledge, this was one of the reasons why polygamy was allowed in Patras, to give Patras-born women plenty of options and ensure they never had to be without a man. But even though I was aware of all this, my pride wouldn't let me flash my ring at my pursuers, and my hands remained tightly balled. The guy would only take my show of a ring as fear, weakness on my part, and there was nothing I hated more than giving a bully what he or she wanted. Reaching the end of the alleyway, I glanced behind me. There was still a fair distance between us. Though my speed had been hindered by running in bare feet over the coarse concrete, I had gotten a head start. I looked left and right, sparing a couple of seconds to figure out which would be the most direct route before hurtling to my right. I'd been in such a rush, I hadn't noticed a man crossing my path at exactly the same moment, and I found myself slamming into a hard chest. I staggered back, gazing up at a familiar face. Not Lee's, but Vigo's. Based on the surprise on his face, he hadn't been sent to find me by Lee. He was obviously just doing his regular evening rounds. Next to him was another man, a warden I recognized from the profiles Lee had shown me the night before. My pursuer's footsteps behind me stopped short, and I twisted to see them do an almost comical, abrupt about-turn and head off in the opposite direction.
"What are you doing without your husband?"
Vigo asked me in a low, disapproving tone.
"I'm on my way to him now,"
I replied tersely. I considered turning the guys who had been chasing me into Vigo and his companion, because I was sure that harassing a woman the way that guy had was against the law. Even though females were supposed to never be unsupervised, it couldn't be legal for men to prey on strays. Vigo gripped my arm firmly. His palm felt rough and warm. He pulled me out of the darkness of the alleyway and into the bustling street.
"Where is your husband?"
he repeated.
"I last saw him in the Red Boar," I muttered.
"You are not supposed to be alone,"
he said tersely, glancing at my ring, which was visible now that I'd unclenched my fists.
"Surely your husband has told you that."
"I'm not alone," I said, probably too snappily, considered I was talking to a warden now. "He's just around the corner. We accidentally got separated in the crowds." Vigo retained his grip on me as we headed down the street, but I shrugged him off when we turned a corner. "I'm not a damn child." I had already put up with Lee holding me earlier. I didn't see why I had to put up with Vigo when he wasn't even my husband. I didn't bother to check Vigo or his partner's reaction to my assertion of independence. But although he stayed close, he didn't try to resume his hold on me. We walked in steely silence until we reached the restaurant. Lee was bouncing on his feet near our table, looking bedraggled with worry while speaking into a phone. His eyes gleamed with relief as he noticed us approach. Relief, but also doubt and disturbance. A dozen questions must have been roaming his mind, but he would have to wait until later for explanations.
"Violet," he gasped, taking my hands and pulling me to his chest.
Vigo cleared his throat.
"With due respect, Mr. Bertrand, I would keep a better eye on this one. She has a rather adventurous mind for a bakery girl."
Vigo's green gaze rested on my face once more. Then he turned on his heels, his long trench coat billowing in the breeze as he and his companion stalked away.
Chapter 12. Lee was understandably shaken. The others looked confused, too, and I was forced to address all of them, even as I looked around for Cad, praying that he hadn't come back out here.
"I'm sorry," I said. I needed to use the restroom, but it was out of service. I found a back door and went through it. I hoped to find another restroom nearby, but I got lost."
Here I turned to Lee and tried to look apologetic. I'm sorry, it was stupid of me. I guess I'm still getting used to the rules. Lee slid an arm around my waist before facing his colleagues. I need to get my girl home, gentlemen. I apologize. Enjoy the rest of your evening. To my relief, he led me away from the restaurant and firmly out of Cad's potential view. We returned to the teeming sidewalks where Lee stopped to hail a cab, one of the dozens of blood-red cars roaming the roads at this hour. It was, of course, too risky to discuss anything meaningful in the back of a cab. We waited until we arrived back at the lab, where we had left Lee's motorcycle. Only as Lee started the engine and we rode off did he speak. "What just happened?" he asked. I could feel how tense his chest was as I gripped it. "I'm sorry," I breathed. "I spotted my cousin, Cad Thorne, and there was no way I could think to warn you. I had to get out of his sight." Lee let out a deep sigh, of relief, I could only assume. "Well, I'm glad that was the reason," he muttered. "I honestly thought you might have tried to do a runner." "No," I reassured him. "You'd be a fool to attempt it," he said. "I know, for more reasons than you might be aware of." I told Lee about the men I'd encountered in the alleyway looking for strays. He tensed up again. "God, Violet, alleyways are the absolute worst place for you to stand at night, especially in that part of the city. Guys like the ones you ran into are known to snatch even married women. They take females away from the city and surrounding suburbs deep into the mountain region. There are a number of scattered towns in those harder-to-reach areas which are inhabited primarily by peasants, though frequented by city men more than the state would like to admit. Let's just say they're not places you'd enjoy visiting." I took the hint. "Men seem to be able to get away with using women for their own dark deeds here in Patras, unlike in my homeland. Any untoward approach by a man toward a woman in Matris would be the last thing he ever did. It virtually never happened." "Did you show them your ring?" Lee asked, rounding a corner and joining the main highway that led to the foothills. "Yes," I lied. It was easier to lie than attempt to justify why I had not. As he lapsed into silence, I recalled the last unsettling words Vigo had spoken. He had already guessed something wasn't right about me. "What did you make of what Vigo said?" I dared ask. "Well, obviously, getting into trouble the day after your arrival wasn't the smartest idea, especially not with Vigo." Lee sounded pissed off. I blew out a breath. "Look, I'm sorry, okay? If Cad hadn't arrived, I wouldn't have left you. How does Vigo even know about me being a bakery girl?" "I told the guys in the lab," Lee said through his teeth. "I guess he overheard the conversation or was privy to office gossip." We spent the rest of the journey in silence, a silence that was broken only by Samuel as we entered the house. Lee headed straight to the staircase after locking the door, without a backward glance at me. "So what now?" I asked, hands on my hips as I stared at his retreating back. "You said you would finally tell me the actual plan." Lee paused in his ascent, but didn't turn around. "I know," he muttered. He hung his head, reaching to rub his temples. "But as I said, it's unfortunate it was Vigo who found you. Just give me a bit of time to clear my head and consider if anything needs to change. I'll still tell you the plan this evening. I promise." I watched in annoyance as he disappeared up the stairs, while I was left with a slobbering Samuel. I moved to the kitchen, and since I hadn't actually eaten anything for dinner, I suspected Lee hadn't either. I rummaged in the fridge. We had already finished all the leftovers, and there were no other pre-cooked items here that I could see. I ended up grabbing a slab of butter and some bread from the cupboard over the sink. Pulling up a chair at the table, I buttered a slice and chewed glumly. Whatever was ahead of me, this sure hadn't been the best start. When Lee came back downstairs, I was still sitting at the table, paging through an old newspaper I'd spotted on one of the seats. It was actually extremely interesting to see the way Patris presented the news. Their excited tone when reporting their advances was so at odds with that of Matris when covering the same news. And the types of advertisements that appeared in between the pages were also interesting. I struggled to find a single one that didn't feature a scantily clad girl. Modeling is apparently one profession that is excusable for women here. I set the paper down as Lee took a seat opposite me. I raised my brows expectantly.
"I've thought about it," he said, leaning back in his chair and rocking slightly. His demeanor was calmer now. "Tonight could have been worse."
His expression softened as our eyes met.
"I'm sorry if I was harsh earlier. You just have no idea how stressful it was not knowing where you went. When you ran, I honestly did believe you'd lost your senses and were trying to escape. So,"
pressing his hands together, he sat forward.
"Now you've seen the egg. You know where it's located, and hopefully could find it in that lab in the dark if you had to. In a few weeks, the City Lab's 10-year anniversary will take place. A banquet will be held to commemorate the occasion. It is not a widely publicized event. It's reserved specifically for the scientists who work in the lab, and members of the King's Council have also been known to attend. The night of this banquet will be the perfect time for us to strike."
Weeks? My stomach plummeted. I had hoped this would be over in days. The thought of staying in Patris for so long terrified me. If tonight's mini-fiasco was anything to go by, I was sure to mess up again. My nature wasn't designed to handle this environment. I stared at him, frowning.
"I don't understand. On a night when so many important people are together in a room, wouldn't security be higher than usual?"
"Yes," Lee replied, "but that shouldn't hamper anything if all goes to plan. Give me a minute." He retreated from the room and returned a minute later carrying the same folder he'd brought in yesterday, along with a second green-colored folder. He opened the latter and pulled out a map. Unfolding it, he spread it out on the low table in front of us. It was a plan of the lab, each floor and all its rooms clearly marked. He pointed to the lowest level, a few doors along from the reception area.
"This is the events hall, where the banquet will take place. What's required is a big distraction that will keep everyone's attention on the ground floor, leaving the highest floor." His finger traveled up the map and rested on the large laboratory that held the egg.
"Unwatched," he concluded. "We won't need long to do the deed anyway, just a few minutes."
"What kind of distraction do you have in mind?" I asked.
"Explosives," Lee replied. "In the weeks to come, my plan is to install them inside the building near the hall, so that when triggered, the blast will be so destructive, security's immediate occupation will simply be attempting to get everybody out alive."
I realized that I had stopped breathing. "So you're saying it's probable that some of the diners will lose their lives in this?"
Lee nodded, and I swallowed the lump in my throat. Having committed woman slaughter twice, claiming lives shouldn't be anything to make me flinch. But of course, those incidents had been accidents. These would be cold, premeditated murders. I wasn't a murderer. I was a girl with a difficult temper.
"And the egg?" I asked. "I don't understand how..."
"I'll figure out the distraction, while you will take care of the most important business. The egg."
"I'd need explosives to blow the glass."
"Yep," he said. "We'll have to work on equipping you with some. Then you will seize the egg, setting off a hot-wired alarm in the process, which will be ignored for a good while due to the commotion downstairs, and make your way up to the roof." He traced my route on the map. "There's a stairwell near the egg's lab, which leads up to the rooftop."
"The roof? Assuming I actually managed to get that far, what happens once I get up there? And won't the building itself be shaken to its core from the explosions at its base? Won't it be alight and crumbling?"
"I'll be careful in my choice of explosives," Lee replied.
The building will be burning, of course, but you'll be quick. Your focus will be extricating the egg and getting to the rooftop. I will meet you up there, and we'll have prearranged transport for the two of us.
I glanced back down at the map. Transport for the two of us. I could only think that meant that Matris would be sending an aircraft to carry us both back over the river to safety.
I still don't understand how we wouldn't be instantly blamed, though, I said. Especially if we were absent from the dinner and...
First, Lee said, we won't be absent from the dinner. We'll need to discuss the specifics of this nearer the time.
Second, I also won't stay away from Patris for long in the aftermath. Once we've returned the egg to Queen Rena's palace, I'll come back discreetly and reintegrate myself into the scene. As for your absence... He grimaced. Trust me when I say it's not difficult for husbands to hide their wives in Patris. Most wives hardly go out anyway.
There was a murder case last summer where it took 5 years for the man to be convicted, simply because nobody noticed his wife's absence.
My jaw dropped. It can be that bad, he assured me, especially if the woman is from Matris. She typically has no family over here. Another option could be to say that you died in the blast.
That might be a better way to play things. Then, as for the issue of who will take the blame if not us, he looked at me in the eye.
Who do you think could be used as a scapegoat?
Used? I didn't like that word.
Still, I racked my brain.
Well, it would need to be someone with regular access to the building. Someone who knew it well, and if the bombing was to make any sense, it would have to be done by somebody who had a reason to hold a grudge against Patris. Someone who was discontented with their life here.
My voice trailed off as Lee nodded.
Who are you thinking?
I asked him.
Slipping out the red folder, he spilled the warden's profiles out on the table before his forefinger settled on a single one. Glaring up at me was the rugged face of Viggo Croft.
Chapter 13
Viggo? I clarified as I stared down at his picture.
Yes, Lee said. He fits the bill excellently for a potential anarchist. Let me explain to you a bit more about his background, and it should be clear why. I told you that he got into trouble with the law for obstruction of justice.
I nodded, just like I did.
Well, the circumstances surrounded that are rather interesting. Viggo used to be married to none other than a Matrian woman. She was an emissary at the time they met. She tried to move over here, but, you guessed it, found the adjustment to Patris's culture extremely difficult. As the official story goes, her and Vigo's relationship had been tense for months. One night they got into an argument, after which she stormed out, alone. Although Viggo went out after her, she managed to shake him off and lose him. She wandered the whole night as an act of protest, and, as the early morning hours drew in, she came upon a couple of drunks who had less than noble intentions. Fortunately for her, or... unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, she had been trained in self-defense by Viggo. She stopped their assault and escaped, but she ended up killing one of the men in the process. Given that there were no neutral witnesses, only she, the victim, and his accomplice were present at the scene, she had no way to prove that she had been acting in self-defense. Viggo found her in the morning, stumbling back toward their home. After she told him what had happened, he tried to cover up her crime, obviously knowing what would ensue for her. He made an attempt to ship her back to Matris, but failed. She was taken before the judge, and, given that she was already guilty of having left her husband and roaming the streets unsupervised at night, there was little sympathy for her in the trial. Long story short, she ended up being sentenced to hanging.
Hung for acting in self-defense? The sheer injustice caused the blood to drain from my face.
Viggo was to serve 4 years in jail for his act of dishonesty,
But given his skill and the value he added to the city's security force, jail time was deemed a waste for him. He was made a special offer: resume his position as a palace warden and serve without pay for 4 years. He's in his second year now. His wife's death has obviously scarred him. He moved away from the city and set up in a cabin in the mountains a few weeks after the hanging. He's never been the most approachable of guys, but since he lost her, he's notorious for being tightly strung, as you may have noticed. Lee rose to his feet and paced in front of the window. So, in sum, we have a man with a clear grudge against the state, who has lost his wife and is now leading a life that's been forced upon him. Men have snapped beneath lesser burdens. He caught my eye. But just as important as all of this, he went on, is that he was made chief coordinator. He has access to the lab. It would honestly be hard to think of a more suitable person to lay the blame on. My stomach tensed. An innocent person. We would be framing an innocent man who had obviously already been through hell and back. This didn't sit right with me. At all. There must be some other way we can pull this off, I breathed. I can't believe that laying the blame on someone else is the only way. What if we didn't set this up as a terrorist attack, but instead, I don't know, some other kind of explosion in the building? It's a laboratory, Lee. Surely there are other exploitable options. Options that don't involve a beating heart. Lee shook his head. I've thought this through, Violet. I've thought this through for days. I understand your hesitation to frame an innocent person. Of course I understand. I feel as uneasy as you about it. But this is the only way we can convincingly pull it off without laying the blame squarely on Matris. Remember, Patris stole the egg from Matris in the first place. We are only retrieving what is ours. What is ours? You mean, what is the Queen's and her army of scientists? An object whose contents I still had no damn idea about. I pursed my lips, my stomach continuing to churn. So, Lee continued, his voice becoming more subdued. The next question is, how exactly would we go about setting the man up as an anarchist? How would we make it convincing? How do we make sure that he's at the right place at the right time? I didn't feel like offering any more suggestions. Lee had apparently already thought all this through anyway. The first issue, he said, is that we need to be able to track his movements and understand his day. We need to be aware of when he's doing his rounds by the Crescent, when he's at home, and when he's at the gym or in the cage. Cage? I interrupted. He's a professional cage fighter. That's what he does for money these days. Takes as many fights as he can while off work. Oh, I see. I recalled the conversation Simon and Lee's other colleagues had regarding the sport's popularity here in Patris. How would we track him? Come with me, Lee said, gesturing to the door. I rose and followed him to his bedroom, where he sat down at his desk in front of a computer monitor before pulling open a drawer and lifting out a ball of metal foil. Within it was a semi-transparent, gel-filled capsule that I almost didn't notice because of its minuscule size. In the center of it was a black dot. I leaned closer. Some kind of square object? My eyes weren't sharp enough. I would need a microscope to be able to describe it better. What is it? I asked. An ingestible tracking device. My eyes shot up to meet Lee's. Are you serious? Yep, Lee said. Swallow it down with some water, and it will embed itself in the gut, staying there for up to 3 weeks. Ugh. Where did you get this thing? It was developed in Matris, actually, he said. I picked it up from Alistair during my last visit to the Queen's Palace. It's so tiny, you wouldn't even notice it gliding down your throat when swallowed with a gulp of liquid. He'll never know it's inside him. and it'll pass through naturally on its expiry.
How would you actually make him swallow this?
Lee refolded the foil around the capsule and placed it in my hand. The question is, how will you?
Chapter 14. Slipping Vigo this tracker will be your first task, Lee explained, and it needs to be done as soon as possible. He has a fight tomorrow night on the outskirts of town. I'll drop you off there, and you'll need to figure out how to do it. Lee opened up his cupboard and pulled out a stiff shirt and an even stiffer gray suit. The shirt and the jacket were padded around the shoulders. A man's outfit. My lips parted. "Try this on," he said. As I pulled the costume on over my clothes, it was surprisingly lightweight and comfortable. I looked in the mirror. My chest, which didn't bulge much anyway, could easily pass as a man's. The shirt was amply bulky.
"This is a temporary measure," Lee said, eyeing me over. "I have a bodysuit for you, too." He rummaged in his closet and pulled out an actual skin-colored male bodysuit, complete with bulges in all the right places.
"But I figured that'd really be throwing you in at the deep end. This gray suit will be enough for tomorrow."
He replaced the bodysuit in the cupboard, and then drew out a wig of curly black locks and strips of facial hair.
"This is insane," I said.
Lee looked half amused as he applied my wig and then the facial hair with a thin, transparent adhesive. By the time he was done, I was a black-haired man with a mustache and a generous beard. The facial hair helped to cover the softness of my jaw. I would have laughed in disbelief at how realistic it looked had I not been so tense.
"However you figure out the logistics, this task shouldn't be too difficult," Lee said. "Remember, it'll be nighttime. I'll give you this, too."
He brandished a cap and planted it on top of my head.
"Oh, and lenses, to be doubly sure."
He left for the bathroom and returned with a rectangular silver packet, as well as a narrow white and blue box. He split the packet open and told me to tilt my head back while he applied the lenses. I hadn't expected the application to be so uncomfortable, but he managed it. When I looked back in the mirror, I had dull brown eyes. My eyeballs had gone reddish with irritation, my tear ducts working over time.
"Your eyes will get used to them," Lee assured me.
"And shoes," I murmured. "I guess I can wear the ones I arrived here with. They're unisex. But then, there's the matter of my voice. What if I need to speak?"
"You should try to avoid speaking at all costs," Lee said. "But, in case you can't..."
He held out the small box so that I could see the front of it. Bold, jagged black letters stamped across the packaging to announce the product as Deep Vox. He opened the box to reveal it was stuffed with tablets.
"You're kidding me."
"Nope," Lee laughed. "This is actually a thing here. Swallow one of these and it'll deepen your voice for up to 12 hours. Designed for men who aren't happy with their natural tone."
"Go deeper, last longer," was the brand's slogan.
"What are the side effects?" I asked, dubious. I squinted at the tiny, almost illegible print on the side of the box.
"Your throat might get sore," Lee said, "but that's nothing that can't be solved with some warm honey and ginger tea. You should get used to it after a while, anyway."
How many times was I going to have to swallow these things? How many excursions would I have to make before leaving Patris? For the sake of my sanity, I figured that it was best to only look one step in front of me at a time.
"I should test the product now to see how well it works on me," I said, "and how quickly it will work."
We headed to the kitchen where I helped myself to a glass of water. I swallowed one of the small round pills gingerly and waited with bated breath. Nothing happened at first, other than my heart pounding. Then I began to feel a constricting, tingling feeling at the back of my mouth. It wasn't strong enough to hurt, just enough to be unpleasant.
"Say something," Lee said. Hello?
A noticeably deeper voice blurted from my lips. Not quite deep enough to pass me off as a man, though. I consulted the product's description, and it said it could take up to an hour for the pill's effect to fully come into play.
I suggest you take 3 tomorrow evening to be safe, Lee said. Otherwise, I guess you're ready.
Lee had to go out early the next morning, which left me alone in the house with Samuel. As I washed up after breakfast, I already knew the wait for this evening's excursion was going to be tedious. Tedious and nerve-wracking. I ended up gathering a pile of books from the library and sitting out in the garden. The mild temperature and mountain breeze helped to calm me. I took a seat in a deck chair and tried to forget about the time for as long as I could, until I could no longer ignore Samuel's whining. I finally acquiesced to his request to play ball and remained busy with him until lunchtime. I brought food outside for both of us so we could sit in the sun and eat, and then spent the rest of the afternoon indoors. I had roamed every room in the house by now, but I still had not set foot in the basement. On heading down there, however, I discovered the door was locked. I huffed and returned upstairs. I had deliberately eaten until I felt stuffed again, hoping to make myself feel drowsy so I might be able to get some solid sleep before Lee's return. I had been awake most of the night before, tossing and turning and worrying. The food was beginning to take its toll, and I slipped into my bed and managed to pass the rest of my alone time in slumber. I woke up to the sound of the front door unlatching and Samuel's barks as he scurried to the door. Yawning, I staggered out of bed, splashed my face with cold water, and headed downstairs. A black canvas bag was waiting by the doorway, filled with some kind of heavy rectangular weight. The door was open, and I caught sight of Lee crossing the drive and returning with an identical second bag. He quickly closed the door and turned to me, rather out of breath. He planted down the second bag next to the first and reached into his pocket. He rummaged and pulled out a square piece of card, a ticket to the event at Brunswick Arena. There were to be 4 fights that evening. Vigo and his opponent, Seamus Vanguard, were up first. "Keep this ticket somewhere safe," Lee told me, "and don't forget to bring it with you." I stowed it in my pocket, my focus returning to the bags. "Where are they?" I asked. "Explosives," he replied over his shoulder as he descended to the basement. Then he changed the subject. "By the way, we should leave in less than an hour." I sensed his unease. As a Matrian male, Lee wasn't a naturally aggressive person. Less aggressive than me, I was sure. I doubted any of this came instinctively to him. "Okay, I'll start getting ready." I dragged my feet up the stairs to Lee's room. Opening the cupboard, I pulled out all the parts of my costume and quickly slipped out of my clothes and pulled on the shirt and suit. I decided to leave the whole facial hair thing to Lee, but did make an attempt to apply my wig. Lee arrived a few minutes later, carrying the lenses and the pills. Once he finished my cosmetic appearance, leaving my eyes feeling sore and watery again, I took the pills. After 10 minutes, my voice had deepened enough to be passable as a man's, even if a slightly effeminate one. But by the time we arrived at the arena, it should have deepened further. I stuffed my ticket into the jacket pocket while Lee equipped me with a pager and, of course, the all-important ball of foil. I was also sure to remove my wedding ring. As we were about to step out of the house, Lee's phone rang. "Hello?" Lee answered. His expression went serious. "Yes. Yes. It's going according to plan, yes." After a few more yeses, Lee handed the phone to me. "It's Alistair," he whispered. "Alistair?" I took the phone and pressed it to my ear. "Mr. Jenks?" "Miss Bates," he replied. It was strange to hear his voice again. He felt like another universe away.
Yeah, it's me. I just took some deep vox pills."
"I see.
How is everything going?
Okay, I think, I replied, frowning.
How are you finding Patris? He asked.
How does he expect me to answer that?
Not exactly pleasant.